Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, our premium USCFootball.com recruiting podcast with Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. We got to do one. We did a couple weeks ago. I'm glad we get to do one again. I know it's a little harder during the season. But we wanted to talk some USC football recruiting. Not a ton going on, but you know, now you got some official visitors and things like that. So we want to recap all of that, answer your questions about this USC football team and how their recruiting efforts are going. And no one does that better than Gerard Martinez. So we have him on the line. Hello, Gerard. How are you?
I'm good. I'm out here in BFN, Iowa, visiting some family, my sister, a niece and brother-in-law. Actually moved out here to Iowa a few months ago, and so we decided to make a family road trip to come out and see them, and never done anything like that with the family, like a road trip where you're on the road for like 3 days to travel out here. And it was interesting. We had our first snow, and this was my niece's first snow here just this past week. It was actually like 4 inches. Which was actually, it's really unseasonal. We kind of looked at the Farmer's Almanac and asked people around, like, is it normally snowing around here? Because we kind of made this time of year to try to beat the weather and kind of get ahead of it. And it's not seasonal. So it was an early snowfall, but it was kind of cool. You know, just you don't get to see snow very much, obviously, living in Southern California. And so that was nice. But I don't have much Wi-Fi on here. So the personal hotspot is getting a workout this week, trying to get stories up and still, you know, keep my foot in the door with the site and stay on the board and be involved. And, you know, there's no really such thing as a vacation. There's always working vacation. So you try to stay in the loop with what's going on. But, you know, the phone is definitely, it's losing a lot of battery. I'm having to keep it charged up.
To be fair, this was Gerard's idea. I didn't say, hey, Gerard, you're on vacation. We need to do a Trojan Blast recruiting podcast. But that was kind of yours.
And no, Ryan's usually like, dude, get away. You know, don't worry about it. You don't get away enough. And so this is actually an opportunity that I thought, you know, it's different. I never, you know, we drove through, we cut through Vegas and you go up through Utah and then go through Wyoming. And I've never seen the country like that before. It's usually flying somewhere. So it was like, folks are doing it. I'll go to and make a thing of it. So it's been cool. But I, you know, don't want to just completely, you know, unplug and be off the grid completely. Although out here, it would be very, very easy, man. It would be very easy. Like, it's us, the corn and the cows.
And if the sounds a little different, Gerard's on his cell phone out in Iowa somewhere. So that's why this sounds a little bit different than what we normally have, the hard line connecting with Gerard. But I'm glad you're getting away. I try to get you to go on vacation. That's not really Gerard's MO. He's like working 365 days a year. I know he might have to go to the hospital. His niece hit him with a whole bunch of snowballs. So that was I saw that. He sent me some videos.
Let's play in the snow. It's for 3-year-old means. Let me throw snowballs at your face.
Yeah. She was very cute, though. I can't believe how big she is now, but it was cool. I mean, you know, I'm glad you get a little road trip, hang with the rents a little bit, hang with your sister, and then you can come back fully refreshed, hopefully, and, you know, hit the meat of the recruiting trail head on. But
yeah, it's too bad there's no big-time recruits in Iowa or Wyoming or Utah now. There's some places in Utah that went through, and I told Blair, I said, you know, man, if you could move to Utah, there's some beautiful places in Utah. Utah is one of the most beautiful states that I've ever gone through. I didn't know it was really that pretty from South, you know, St. George all the way up to Park Summit. It's like, wow, there's a lot of scenery when you go through Utah. So I was wondering, you know, where's Siaki Ika at? Where are you at, Siaki? Pull off the freeway and maybe do an interview with you or something. But he didn't hit us back.
Oh, he did? Well, I mean, maybe on your drive back, you can stop in. It's beautiful. And I'm going there. I've never been to Rice-Eccles. It's the only Pac-12 stadium I've been to. I've been to BYU, but I have not. So in Provo, but I have not been to Rice-Eccles. So I'm looking forward to that this weekend. And I just did a radio interview with, with one of the ESPN radio station in Salt Lake City, and they said it's supposed to be like 60 degrees. So it's not going to be any snow or anything. If you saw the Denver Broncos right. game with the Rams, it was snowing there. But
yeah, that cold front, that was a weird cold front. It was an early cold front. They usually don't get snow in a lot of these places early on. And so, yeah, I think it kind of hit everybody by surprise. So right now, yeah, driving back, it's supposed to be low 60s, upper 50s. So it looks it's pretty nice out here. So it should be good for the USC game. It should be, it'll probably dip into the, maybe the high 40s, you know, by the time they're in the, you know, second quarter halftime, but it should be okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, it should be interesting. I'm glad it's not going to be too cold. Maybe we'll cross paths. Like, well, I'm not going out till Friday. You'll probably be back by then. Or maybe, I don't
hopefully,
know. Maybe you'll
yeah,
be.
Yeah. Hopefully I'm already back. I hope I don't get stuck anywhere in Beaver or something because there's a thunderstorm or something.
Yeah. We'll see what's going on. Yeah. But that's, maybe we can talk about that first. I know there's a few topics we want to get to. We got a few questions, not a ton. We it's mostly team stuff we're doing right now, but this is a pretty big game this weekend for USC. Obviously, I think the Colorado one was huge, and maybe they were a bit of a paper tiger. They did not look very good against the Trojans. The defense played really well. You see 5-star players, Gerard, coming out there, like Talanoa Hufanga starting and Apalie Naoteote doing really well and starting. And of course, you know, JT Daniels and Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, prominent 5-star freshmen were, you know, really impacting that game. And they've had a huge impact on the season. Maybe talk about how, what kind of impact that has on USC recruiting in general. And then specifically with Utah, I mean, lose this game against Utah, you might not win the South. I don't know. Is that how much of an impact that would have on recruiting?
That would have an impact. I always say, I think it's not necessarily the losses, but how you lose. I think USC has to go out there and they have to be competitive and they've got to play for four quarters. It can't be like Texas where you go out and you play a good game in the first half and then you come out the second half and you get throttled and it just looks bad for recruiting. And certainly if USC isn't the South Divisional champ and they're not represented in the Pac-12 championship, it's a step back. The trajectory is going down somewhat because you've seen them been able to go win a Pac-12 championship. They got to the South Division. They've done some of these things already. And so you want to see that trajectory continue to go up, win the bowl game, et cetera. I think this would be a big year to reinforce if they're able to win the Pac-12 championship again. It would be really, you know, last year wasn't just a fluke. They've done it. They've sort of established some dominance within the conference. I think when you look at what people say about the Pac-12 outside the conference, Washington and Stanford really are the two teams that people talk about the most being the most dominant teams in the Pac-12 over the past few years. So USC's really still in that mode of trying to get traction as being a dominant program within the conference. And I think that certainly helps on the recruiting trail, and it helps sell sort of that trajectory that we're an upcoming program. And we, of course, are trying to get back to that Pete Carroll era. That's what everybody talks about at USC. Everybody will continue to talk about that at USC because that was the latest stretch of success that USC had. So you want to play well. It's an odd game because I believe it's on the Pac-12 network. So it's a game that not a lot of recruits are actually going to see for themselves. We do believe that Puka Nacua, the 4-star wide receiver commit from Orem, Utah, is going to be there on an official visit. So that will be interesting. Puka has a brother that plays for BYU, and he's obviously got another brother that's in the NFL. So Utah is really the only other school that's recruiting him hard and has a chance to probably steal him away from USC. So they're going to use that opportunity likely this weekend. At least that was the plan coming into this week, that he was going to take that official visit this weekend, and Utah would try to kind of show off a little bit their talents and what they're doing in terms of the offense and what they can do to develop him against USC. Like, here's the school you're committed to. Here's how much better this situation would be if you committed to us instead. So Utah is going to use that to be able to play against USC. And obviously USC, you know, coaching staff has to be motivated by that. You know, that, hey, you know, it's kind of like when you have homecoming and you decide as a high school to have a team coming to homecoming. That's more or less saying, we don't think that team's going to be very good, because for homecoming, you want to win. You want the surest thing. So you have a good homecoming that everybody's happy for it. And when you bring somebody in there, that's the first thing that opponent says is, oh, they don't respect us because they have us as a homecoming opponent. Well, sort of, kind of, when you have a big recruiting weekend, That's sort of what you're saying is, you know, we're going to be focused more on these recruits. We think we're going to blow you out. We think we're going to have this great display against you, and we can show this off to the recruits in person. And it's going to be this great positive weekend. And you as an opponent have to feel like, well, we're going to go in there and we're going to ruin that weekend. USC did that a number of years ago with Oregon when Chip Kelly was there, and they brought in like LeBron James and all of these people, and they had like this long list of official visitors, and USC went up there and beat them and completely ruined that weekend. And that can kind of derail your recruiting efforts a bit. You know, when you put everything on one weekend, and I don't know that Utah is going to have a huge weekend overall in terms of number of recruits, but obviously if they bring in Puka Nacua, that's a sign that they're pretty confident in playing USC. So that's going to be kind of interesting. I think in terms of wins and losses, USC goes out there and they play Utah like they had played Utah in the past, on the road in Utah, which has been close games, been hard-fought games. Then it's like, you know, you lose. It's like, okay, Utah's a pretty good team. I don't know if it's going to have this huge impact on recruiting. Obviously, the message boards will be on fire like they already are. People just want to see Clay Helton gone. That's not going to change. But in terms of in the recruit size, USC goes out there and they play decently and they keep it close. I don't know if it's going to have a huge impact. But if you go out there and you play like you did against Texas, or you have a Notre Dame game like you did last year where USC just, they had injuries on defense and they just whiffed. It just looked like a game that USC was going to use almost as a bye week. I mean, they came out and they gave no resistance. You have one of those on the road against Utah, and you're going to start to see some impact on the recruiting trail. And specifically, not even against Utah so much, but obviously Oregon. Oregon's the team in the Pac-12 that's really aggressive. They're sort of pushing the envelope with a lot of SEC tactics and how they recruit, and they're going after a lot of the same guys that USC is going after. So if they're able to win and they're able to put kind of, again, that positive trajectory, that upward trajectory against their coaching and their development and where the program's going, then you've got to deal with them. And they, I think, would be harder to recruit against than even Washington. I think Washington's looking for certain kind of players and sort of like Stanford. They're not going to go head-to-head with USC against every guy. But with Oregon, they're pretty much Oregon would recruit every guy that USC would recruit. Anybody that USC offers, Oregon's like, yeah, we'll take that guy too. So that would be much more of an impact if USC hits a downward slope and you lose against Utah and all of a sudden you're out of the Pac-12 championship game. And then you kind of look at yourself and you're going, okay, you can sit there and you can sell it a bit with JT Daniels being the freshman. And again, that's something that you've already heard a little bit from recruits that, you know, you've got a freshman quarterback. That's a very difficult thing to play with against teams on the road, especially early in the season. So at the end of the season, obviously, you want to see JT Daniels become a better quarterback. He's got more experience. You want to see Amon Ra continue to get better. You want to see certain players come in and continue to get better. But that could be used somewhat of an excuse for maybe not playing really well this year. On the flip side, obviously, playing freshman is good because the recruits that are coming in want to see that you're going to do that and you're open to doing that. You know, USC defensively is being criticized quite a bit because there's not been enough rotation. And, you know, probably Yoteosi coming in is not necessarily rotation. It's because Cam Smith was hurt. So that's kind of forced rotation. We've seen that in the past. Same thing with really Talanoa Hufanga. He's coming in because there's been injuries and there's been transfers and there's the whole thing. So it's sort of forced rotation, but it is freshmen playing and freshmen playing well. And recruits do see that and they do like that because they can see themselves, you know, being able to have that shot and go in there and have an opportunity to play early.
I think Cameron Newton would be a hell of a middle linebacker, no?
Cam Newton would be a heck of an outside linebacker. I don't know, a middle linebacker. He's a little bit of a prima donna for that, but he's a good outside linebacker, like a pass rusher. He'd be a heck of a pass rusher.
It'd be pretty funny. Okay, so it's also good recap there, but it's also official visit season, right? USC had a few over the weekend. Maybe you want to give your thoughts on who came to campus, how it all went, what it all means. Before we get into that, you know, we do have some fans on the message boards and stuff that the team, when they're not playing up to what they feel the expectations are, some people say, I check out of recruiting. Have you seen that or heard that from people before we get into the official visit stuff? Because I just thought of that. It's like some people, it's like a turnoff, you know, and other people still lap up every, you know, ounce of information they can get. But some people are like, oh, I'm so pissed off at the team. I don't even want to think about recruiting.
Yeah, I think that's more for the guys that are not really into it. It's sort of, you know, kind of passive in the recruiting. It's interesting. You get a good player, and it's like, okay. I think that's really sort of where the line is drawn. This time of year, is never really a intense time for USC in terms of recruiting. So in general, it's easy to check out because USC is really not doing a whole lot. They did sneak in an official weekend against Colorado, which was interesting. I think, as I kind of talked about, the thinking and strategy that goes on with official visits, Colorado was coming in as 19th ranked, undefeated team. A lot of people looked at Colorado when they played against Arizona State and thought Colorado could run through USC. I mean, this is a legitimate team that's pretty good all around. They've got a decent running game. They've got a star receiver. They've got a good, experienced quarterback that can run a bit. And their defense is pretty solid. And so I think having official visitors in was a little bit of a surprise for a lot of people, because you're kind of looking at USC saying they could lose that game at home. And if they lose that game at home, that's not really the best to bring in official visitors. But maybe they felt confident. Maybe the team, the coaches, felt like they had a good game plan against Colorado set up, and they weren't necessarily too afraid to bring in guys for official visits. So USC does that a little bit where they bring in guys. And obviously with the new signing period being earlier, that's something that kind of pushes the dates up in terms of maybe when you want to bring in guys. You don't want to bring all your official visitors in just for the Notre Dame game or just at the end of the season, because, you know, that December date, you want to make sure you're not caught with your pants down. You don't bring in a kid, you know, or you have him scheduled for an official visit. It's a little too late. So they jumped it in and they got it against Colorado, and that was interesting. They were able to bring in Ben Griffiths, who's a punter from Australia that is committed to USC. He has a full ride scholarship from USC. When he committed, there was some question as to whether he was coming in as a preferred walk-on. Was he going to be 2018, 2019? Coming in for 2019, and he is a full scholarship player, so you can add another punter into the full scholarship category for USC. USC also brought in the commitment of Drake London, who is a receiver from Moore Park, 6'5", 210, a guy that I've talked about a lot. Saw him earlier this season against Higley High School, which is interesting that Drake London comes in at the same time as Ty Robinson, who plays for Higley. So Drake London played against Higley. They blew him out, was great in that game. Basketball player also. Now, he only takes one official visit. I asked about that because I was not sure how that went with official visits. You know, when you're a two-sport athlete, legitimately, you know, you could be played two sports, but you only get that one official visit. So USC burned it a little early for him, I thought. You know, you could think that you might want to wait until the Notre Dame game or later in the season to bring him in. But the thought around his camp is that he's pretty solid with USC and wants to go to USC, and so they decided to bring him in early on this official visit. And they did bring him in with Ty Robinson, the 6'7", 285-pound defensive tackle from Higley High School out there in, I believe it's Gilbert, Arizona. And so that was kind of the biggest news coming from this weekend, was Ty Robinson's official visit and how much he liked USC, how much his family liked USC. He really, really hit it off with Kenichi Odizi. I mean, that was kind of the thing that resonated from his official visit and the interview that Blair Angulo did, and just talking to sources around USC. There was just a sort of a bond there that happened, that he just really loved what USC had to offer and loved the coaching staff. And as a guy that a lot of people felt, you know, was kind of written off to Nebraska for a while, certainly Nebraska has had a down season. They're transitioning and haven't won their first game yet. So that kind of opens the door for a lot of teams. Now, this was his first official visit, which you got to point that out. And, you know, first official visit, sometimes the kids are just, you know, they're overwhelmed, like, wow, this is great. And then they take another official visit and they realize, oh, wow, you know, all official visits are pretty good. But there's a little more, I think, there with his relationship with Kenichi Odizi. And that's why Blair Angulo and myself both put our crystal balls in for USC with Ty Robinson. And just as a player, I guess I would describe him, because that always comes up, that's a follow-up to any player that looks like he might end up at USC, is Caleb Tremblay, but more athletic. I think he's sort of what you thought and hoped Caleb Tremblay would be coming out of junior college. I think Caleb was, I believe he was listed at like 6'5", 295, and he's probably really more like 6'3", maybe 290. I think he's more along the line. So he's a shorter, smaller, more of a sort of run stopper, body catcher type defensive tackle than a really good pass rusher. And I think with Ty Robinson, he's legitimately 6'6". About 300 pounds, and he's got long arms. He's more skilled. He's a guy that actually played tight end for a while, And I saw him actually going through warm-ups, playing tight end, caught the ball really well. I kind of joked with him afterwards. I said, why didn't the coaches put you a tight end against Moore Park, man? I mean, shoot, you look like you could catch. And he's like, I guess he just really didn't trust me too much with the football. But he's a guy that agility-wise and athleticism and the length, you can see be a guy that could be a really good three technique. So kind of an interesting move there. It's not a guy that, like I said, we kind of circled up a little bit as a potential USC commit, you know, a few months ago. But now you're kind of adding him in as a potential guy that you could put in the interior and would add to the class very much, you know, the 2019 class where you want some depth on the defensive line. So every guy that you can get that can play in the interior, you want to. So Ty Robinson right now looking pretty good for USC.
All right. So official visitors, is there, the Arizona State game's next home game? Do you know, are there any other visitors kind of scheduled that we know yet, or is this war room stuff? What do you got?
Not right now. There's a possibility they could bring in more. Again, I think that early signing period bumps up a little bit of the schedule for USC. I know they don't really like to do it, and they really never have liked doing it. Pete Carroll kind of goes back to that where, you know, they really want to focus on their team meetings and everything. So they're not big on bringing in a bunch of kids. And I think, obviously, the atmosphere at USC right now is not great. You've got the construction, which is driving away a lot of fans. And the Coliseum doesn't look its best because of the construction. So, again, it was a little surprising that they brought in three official visitors for that week. But, you know, if they're trying to maneuver guys in and trying to make sure that they're in a good position for their signing period, you kind of don't have a choice.
All right. I wanted to talk about the defensive back recruiting a little bit, but you know, I think maybe let's get to this one question first because it kind of corresponds to what we started the show with. So we'll do Dave's question first, then we're going to get into some. We have more questions too, but we'll get into the defensive back recruiting. So Dave said, in their current state, USC football is worse than they were in Clay Helton's first season, and are probably worse than last year's team. How can this trend continue? Or how long can this trend continue before recruiting really starts to suffer if it hasn't already? Once this happens, the games that SC currently wins mainly on talent will stop happening, thus driving the program down into a pile of irrelevancy. That's from Dave. A cheery, bright email from Dave.
Yeah, kind of, again, seems a little more like a statement than a question. I don't know if I'm here to persuade Dave off the ledge a little bit, but first of all, I mean, USC started off, 1-3? I mean, we're counting that first full year as Clay Helton's first year, not the interim. So, I mean, they started out 1-3. They get blown out by Alabama. At this point in the season, I don't know if we're saying that they're a better team than they are now. I think that's kind of hard to say, you know, when you're looking at JT Daniels and expecting that he continues to develop as a freshman quarterback and gets better. You've got some injuries. And I don't know. The schedule, I think this is, you know, kind of where you see what USC is now. You know, we saw what they were when they played against Arizona and Colorado. Those are two games that they should have blown those teams out. Now, in terms of the ceiling that they have, when you watch those games, you see if they don't make mistakes, and they don't become complacent, particularly in the Arizona game. That was one of those games where they got disinterested and they checked out. They were thinking, man, what am I going to do when we go home and what frat party's going on? Those guys completely mailed in that second half. And they didn't do that necessarily against Colorado. I didn't see that same type of disinterest once they got that 28-7 lead. But they still made mistakes, and they still allowed Colorado to come back. They kind of just let them hang there. Now, I will give a lot of credit to the play calling, whether that be Clay Helton or T. Martin. They stayed aggressive in that game. And I think that's part of the reason why it wasn't quite the bottom falling out as it was against Arizona, because they kept throwing the ball downfield. And there was two opportunities. There was two different passes there. One to Velus Jones, which he should have caught, which would have probably set them up for another score. And then there was the one that was just out of the reach of Amon-Ra St. Brown, which was another, you know, play action down the field. The guy was open. You connect on that play, and you probably got a touchdown. And that's execution. Now, that's not the play calling. That's not the play design. Those players were open. That's just a matter of execution. It's a matter of JT, you know, just throwing that ball just a little more accurately. And, you know, Velus Jones, I think, on the other hand, just hanging on the ball. He really hung on to the ball for the hardest part of the catch. And then when he rolled over on his back for some reason, it just fell out of his hand. So I think you know, we're looking at how they're developing and how they're progressing and how better they are getting. And from the beginning of the season to now, I see that there is improvement. I think the offensive line is playing a little better. Are they having, you know, some really bad drive-killing penalties still? Yes, they definitely are. And I definitely think the offensive line has not been great for the past 3 years, quite frankly. I think you've seen way too many inconsistencies, and I think it's been probably the most consistent thing is the penalties and just stupid play and some kind of insynchronization that they've had. They just haven't been able to look like a core group that's played well cohesively, I think, for a whole season. And so that's something that has to be addressed at the end of the season. But in terms of, you know, is this team, are they able to go out and beat, you know, the USC with Sam Darnold? I guess you probably say no. You know, this team is not good enough to go beat that Sam Darnold team at midseason in 2016. I think that would be probably, you could say that. So in that respect, I guess the email is correct in saying that USC is not as good now as they were that first year. But what relevance does that have to actually recruiting? Not a whole lot. Again, it becomes, with recruiting, where are they at the end of the year in terms of wins and losses? And what can USC sell against other teams? And is the games that they lose, is there enough there that they lose traction on a few guys? If you lose four games, you know, you lose, let's say you lose to Utah on the road and you turn around and you lose another game. You get blown out of those games, it's going to hurt you. It's not a good look. It's something that sort of good teams don't get blown out. Good head coaches don't get blown out. And we've seen Clay Helton already get blown out. So there's plenty of credence and plenty of fuel for that argument that, you know, Pete Carroll didn't really get blown out. I think that Stanford game was the one game his last season where they had Gerhardt at home was really like kind of one of the first only blowouts to USC and the Pete Carroll. They lost games. They were 6-6 this first season, but they were competitive in every one of those games. And that's what you tend to see, you know, Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. Those guys tend to, even when you lose, those teams tend to be in those games and they stay competitive. And so I think really going forward, that's always the big deal for USC. You lose four games with a freshman quarterback, I don't think it's going to be the end of the world for recruiting. But if you lose four games and you have a couple really bad blowouts, you leave yourself open for sort of, you know, the negative recruiting and people kind of look at, you know, how did that happen? How did that happen? How did you lose that badly? And I think that's more of an issue when it comes to recruiting. So that's what I said. I think if USC is competitive against Utah from a recruiting standpoint, I don't think it has that big of an impact.
I think you have a key point in there because there's sometimes USC fans, I get it. Like you're upset with Clay Helton. You're upset with the way the staff is and whatever. So you're looking at this from a negative point of view all the time. I think if you're looking on the recruiting side, Clay Helton isn't like going into a living room and going, you know what? We had 0 yards rushing against Colorado in the first half. That's not what he's leading with. He's leading with the stuff that, you know, we got freshmen throwing to freshmen and scoring touchdowns. And there's a whole different thing. I think sometimes fans look at it as like, well, but what if you consider this? What if you consider this? There's still, the point you said, a lot to sell. USC still obviously has a lot to sell. So it's not like it's, you know, everything's terrible. Yeah, there's going to be a bottom line at the end of the day, and if there's like four blowout losses on there, you know, that's harder to explain, but there's still a lot of things you can sell. When you're selling a product, you're not telling me what you know, the problems are with it. You're telling me what's great about it. You know, like I'm not getting side effects. I'm getting, and I feel like sometimes the fans on the Peristyle, they're only talking about the side effects. They're not talking about what the point is.
I mean, you come away from that Colorado game and you've got a recruit that, I mean, just probably 2 to 3 months ago, wasn't sure he was even going to take an official visit to USC. I mean, Ty Robinson had talked to me after the Moorpark game, and I was kind of getting them like, hey, what's the percentage that USC gets an official visit? You got Cal, you got Nebraska, you got Oregon was in there, maybe Alabama's also in there. So he's got like four schools there which he's talking about taking official visits to, and he's trying to set up dates. I'm like, so is USC basically vying for that fifth visit? Yeah, okay. What's the probability they get that fifth visit? It's, you know, 50%, 60%. He said, you know, I really like them a lot. You know, they're high on my list, but he wouldn't necessarily commit to saying like, yeah, they're probably going to get a visit. Yeah, 75% get a visit. So that shows me that they're on the outside looking in. And it really, for the large part, I think that was because during the summer and late spring, USC had not really turned it on. Kenichi Odizi really didn't start contacting him, and I think getting that personal contact until probably the season started. And that's sort of what USC does with recruiting. They sort of hit a flip a switch a little bit. And now you can, and we talked about this before, you can do that when you're winning, but when you're losing, that switch sometimes doesn't come on. You think you can just roll into December, and this is what, you know, where defensive back recruiting is going to be, you know, really hard. If you're not winning those games and you need to close with some guys and you're battling against Oregon or Washington, which Washington has had a lot of success against USC, I shouldn't say a lot of success, but a moderately high amount of success against USC recruiting defensive backs with Jimmy Lake, that's really hard to flip that switch then. You can't decide, I'm just going to start recruiting in late November, you know, when in-home visits come around, and expect these kids are going to have a lot of interest in USC at that point. So USC has some coaching staff, and I'm not going to name names. They have some coaches on the staff that are some real part-time recruiters. There's some guys that kids don't hear from during the summer. They literally say, I haven't heard from this coach in months. And that's one of those things that's a big of an issue for USC. They've got some guys that have the mentality that this is the NFL, and the scouts go out, and they do their thing, and they make their evaluations, and we sit back and wait for the draft, and whoever I get is whoever I get, and that's why I coach. That's not college football. You can't do that. You've got to go out and you got to shop for the groceries. You've got to make sure that you get those groceries, and then you can go in and start cooking the food. That's how college football works. And they don't have a complete coaching staff when it comes to that right now. So when they've been able to get away with it, with the wins, you're coming away, you win a Pac-12 championship, you come away, you're going to the Rose Bowl the last few seasons. Okay, Rose Bowl, Pac-12 championship. I can sell that. I can flip a switch and say, we're Pac-12 champions. We're the best team on the West Coast. Why don't you want to come here? Beach, Los Angeles, the great education. You've got lots of things to sell. But when you come in and you're not even South, you're not even the South Divisional champs, what do you talk about? You, well, the great education. You talk about the beach, and you try not to talk about football. And one of the other reasons why I think USC brought in those kids now, and they may have official visitors for the Arizona State game, is because usually they wait to bring in, I mean, half a dozen, if not more, official visitors for the Notre Dame game or the UCLA game, whatever's last on the schedule. Well, if USC's watching Notre Dame play this year, they may not want to have a bunch of official visitors in for that game because they may get their asses handed to them, and they know that. And they don't want to have official visitors at the stadium against Notre Dame with the fan base of, you know, 30,000 people left in the stands in the second half booing. So that's one of those things that you have to look at this long-term strategy, and you have to kind of finagle and maneuver a little bit so you don't end up in a spot where you're trying to explain what you haven't done rather than explain what is there and the successes that you had during the season.
That's going to make people really happy to hear that you got some part-time recruiting coaches on staff, Gerard. That's
going to fire something that is not news to anybody.
It's been discussed.
Yeah. There's just names that come up during the year. There's guys like, you know, Gavin Morris and T. Martin. I mean, Eric Ziskin is involved a lot with recruiting. There's names that kids talk about, you know, during the year. And they say, yeah, I talk to this coach all the time and have a really great relationship with Kenichi Odizi. I really enjoy it. And then there's other guys that just, you know, it's all the online coach from USC or it's all the this coach. You don't get names. It's like, man, there's not a personal relationship there. And so you go, well, how often do you talk to them? I talk to them now and again, and not as much. I really haven't heard from USC as much as Oregon, or I've heard much as Alabama or Florida. You know, those are some schools that, you know, those names and those coaches at those positions, they come up time and time again. And so you know who's really grinding and who's not. It's not real hard, you know, when we gotta have to fill in the blanks of what coach from USC is recruiting that kid. And the fans know it, and they read it, and they see exactly kind of how things are playing out. And I mean, USC's been able to recruit past that because they flipped that switch in December, and you get kids in on official visits, you've got a good season. There's a lot to be able to sell, but if you don't have that season and you've got things that you've got to explain instead of sell, it's a different story. And we're going to see how that shakes out this year if they're not able to get to the Pac-12 championship game and win it, because really that's the trajectory that they should be able to go into the Pac-12 championship. And they should win the Pac-12 championship. But at the very most, they should be able to go there and play against Washington, Oregon, and be competitive. Once again, it's about being competitive and showing, you know, because again, if you want to explain something, You don't want to explain why you didn't even get to a bowl game or why you didn't get to the Pac-12 championship. You want to explain why you didn't play well in the Pac-12 championship with a freshman quarterback. Yeah. That's really an easier explanation, and recruits are more apt to listen to that as football players who understand what it's like to have an inexperienced quarterback than, you know, the alternative to, well, we didn't even get there, and yeah, we were Pac-12 champs last year. Well, what happened? What was the big drop-off? Well, we had a freshman quarterback. Okay, but man, he was a good freshman quarterback. Yeah. People see freshman quarterbacks in other places, like, you know, they see Tua Tagovailoa going out there for Alabama and winning a national championship for them, and it totally skews a little bit. And it does definitely excuse things more for the fan than it does the high school football players, because they're not watching with this fine-tooth comb and just, you know, going over every little bit of the team and the statistics like fans are. They're not. They may see the highlights on SportsCenter. Again, this game against Utah, it's not even televised on most TVs. It's the Pac-12 network, which a lot of people don't get. They're going to hear about the game more than they're going to see the game. You know, so what do they see? They see the final score. So that's why I say when you go out there and you lose 45-13, that's a bad look. You don't want that.
Yeah.
That's a bad look, because the final score just is the final score. That's really what the kids are going to see. They may look in the box score and may see, well, what happened or whatever. But if you win and you lose in a competitive game, they see the box score and it's like, well, okay, they played a tough game. That first quarterback on the road. I get it. I see.
Yeah, and if you lose, I mean, you beat Arizona by 4 points, it looks like, oh, that was a close game. Like, well, it wasn't until it was, you know.
That's the other side of it. That's the other side too. Yeah, that's where they're not blowing teams out where they should be. And again, that's, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, kids are just kind of looking at the highlights. They're busy. They're crazy. They're going to do all kinds of stuff. They got basketball. They got track. They got football. They got baseball. They got girlfriends. They got prom. They got all kinds of stuff. You talk to them about schools, and 99% of them don't really know a lot about the school. It's literally what the coaches have told them. It's what they've heard from their own high school coaches and people close to them. There's not a lot of kids that have really done the research to know, well, yeah, USC, you know, they've got Stephen Carr coming back. And yeah, well, they lost, you know, a couple of good running backs. But, you know, Stephen Carr is going to be really good. And, well, I'm not seeing Stephen Carr develop like I really thought he was supposed to this past year. But he did have the back injury. That's our fans talking. That's not a kid. That's not even guys like JT Daniels that are really cerebral type players. They're not looking at the team under a microscope like that. That's what the fans do. So that's why you get the different reactions. That, you know, they're looking at this from the 30,000 foot view, where the fans are looking at it at the 5 foot view. You know, they every nuance of what's going on. You know, they don't like this and they don't like that. I mean, even when the team wins, you're going to get lots of criticism. I mean, Pete Carroll's run. How many people were criticizing what was going on and the hires he made? You know, every year it was, you know, oh, they got rid of Norm Chow and Kiffin and they need to do this, need to do that, because they weren't getting back to the national championship game. They weren't national champions every year. So there's always going to be that criticism from fans because they're looking at it a much closer angle and their perspective is completely different. The recruits just see the box scores.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about defensive back recruiting, because we get some questions about it. I know we had Bear Secuda wrote in about some of the rankings of different guys. Obviously, there's been some attrition at the positions, safety and cornerback, this year for USC, and you know, making it so Talanoa Hufanga can start like he is. But what do you think, how that attrition there has impacted the position? How many guys are going to take? Maybe give us like a, you know, recruiting 101 of USC defensive back recruiting.
Well, definitely it's impacted a lot. I think USC coming into the year would have been okay if they would have gotten maybe two cornerbacks and a safety, or maybe two safeties and a cornerback. Kind of depended on, you know, what was there at the end of the year and who they liked better, because they really were taking their time in terms of evaluation. And I think with the safety position particularly, that is a position where guys can kind of emerge in their senior year. It's not one of those positions that you kind of want to get out in front of and you know who the best receivers are going to be, or you know who the best defensive linemen are going to be. That's a position where guys kind of can come out of the woodwork a little bit. So I think they were kind of taking their time and going through things. Now you had, what, five defensive backs basically off the roster that were coming in at this time last year, where you had Jamel Cook, Jack Jones, Bubba Bolden is now gone. Jakari Godfrey now gone. I mean, you've got a lot of talent there. I mean, that's a lot of talent that's left the roster. And USC, I think one of their deepest positions going into fall camp was probably defensive backs. I mean, they really had like a good looking group of defensive backs, but quite a few of those guys are gone. And then you even put in the question mark of Isaiah Polamalu and how healthy is he going to be going forward? You know, he's had some injuries now that kind of make you question how durable he is and whether he's going to be able to be a guy that can play a whole season for you. So USC's taking a full class of defensive backs. They're taking a full class, period. And it's interesting because now the rules have changed where you have to take 25. You can't supplement that with anything. You can't, you know, make the gray shirts, or you can't bring in a guy that's, what they did in the past where they would have early enrollees would count against the past year, and you could kind of do some things and finagle some things. Can't do that anymore. 25 is like the hard number to bring in per year. So they're kind of stuck at that cap of 25. They could probably bring in more than that, seeing how they've had so many guys leave, and they may have more guys transfer. You just don't know with these new rules and how this all kind of plays out. So this is an interesting time for USC. And with the defensive back position, I think that they definitely got to bring in a full class of at least two safeties and two cornerbacks. How those guys look on paper as opposed to how those guys actually come in and play is kind of a big question with defensive back. USC in the past have really gone after size, but this year is different, which tells me sort of they're getting what they need to get for depth. They need to just get some guys. They need to have some bodies. Chris Steele is obviously a guy we've talked about being able to play free safety and cornerback. So he's a little bit of a wild card. You know, is he coming in with USC feeling, okay, that's a guy that can play safety. We need him to play safety so they don't have to recruit an extra guy at safety. Or is he a guy that they look at and say, no, he's really cornerback. That's where we recruited him. That's where we want him. He's a cornerback. We do have to get a safety on top of him. That's kind of a question. Obviously, Max Williams is going to play cornerback for sure, but small, totally not the kind of cornerback that USC has recruited in past years, but a pretty good football player. He is coming off an ACL, so you have to consider that as well, but that's another body that they're bringing in. I think really kind of looking forward, there's not a lot of depth at the safety position. And that kind of goes into what I was saying before about USC being kind of patient and allowing the process to sort of play out so they could get the best evaluations possible. So maybe they pick up a couple guys that are lower ranked guys that are not, you know, high on the board of everybody, but still end up being good contributors. I don't know if they can really do that so much anymore. They haven't put out a ton of offers. Trey Davis is another guy that's committed. A lot of people thought maybe he would shake loose from the class just because he's not a highly related guy. A lot of people thought that was a little bit of a reach for USC. I'm hearing he's going to be in part of the class. And I think with the way things are in terms of depth, and you lose a guy like Jakari Godfrey, this is sort of the equivalent. He's sort of Jakari Godfrey this year. You know, sort of a tall, lanky corner, not a lot of production, not a lot in terms of, you know, his ability to go out and national camps or anything to show off, but there's some potential there just from his profile. He's not as fast as Godfrey was. Godfrey, the buzz about him is he was a 10-8 guy and he was running track, and that's not really Trey Davis. So that's a little bit, again, a little bit of a reach perhaps for USC. They're still recruiting Trent McDuffie. They were a little bit kind of on the outside looking in for him. I think they still are to some extent, but they have moved, I think, more in that top sort of three group for him, where they're probably more like fifth, maybe. So there's some negotiation with him. He's still potentially a guy, obviously the teammate of Chris Steele. So I've always questioned whether, you know, they would go to the same school, if McDuffie maybe want to go to another school just because, you know, he knows that he's going to be competing there with Steele. Isaiah Rutherford is gone off the board, going to Notre Dame. That's a guy that USC just didn't really recruit very hard. Odd, because they are after Laiatu Latu, who we think probably ends up at USC. That's the 6'5", 260-pound defensive end outside linebacker from Carmichael up there near Sacramento. And he's teammates with Rutherford. And actually, Brandon Huffman just put in a prediction for Latu to go to USC. And we know USC has been recruiting him really hard. He was the kid that Clay Helton was quoted after the junior day saying he had a deep, dark love for him. And so that's pretty serious, man. That's pretty serious, Ryan.
That sounds serious. That does sound very serious.
I hit, you know, Brandon up. I said, Puff, man. I mean, so like, is Clay Helton's love for Latu going to end in marriage? And he thinks he does. He thinks that they do commit. So, yeah, and I think with Latu, that's a big reason why USC is not too worked up about Kayvon Thibodeau. I think they feel like Latu is more of a fit for them in their defense and how he plays. He's better at standing up than Kayvon Thibodeau, and they feel like he's a guy that can end up being a big-time player for them. So Cal is a school that's talked a lot with him, mainly because of rugby. He's a really good rugby player, and Cal has a really good rugby team. So a lot of people kind of thought, maybe rugby is kind of the thing that pulls him more towards Cal. But at this point, Cal's still Cal. You saw them against UCLA last weekend. People were buzzing about them early in the season. It seems to be, every couple of years you get one of those Cal teams that early in the season you're pretty talked about. Happened with Tedford too, and then they become Cal again. So Cal's Cal, and USC still looking like a better choice, and they're recruiting the heck out of him, which I thought was odd because they just didn't recruit Isaiah Rutherford very hard, who I think is a very good player in and of itself. So he's off the board. They're still messing around with Akeem Dent. He'll probably take an official visit, I hear, but that's a long shot and a half. They've been talking to Mikel Wright a little bit, but he's going to Oregon. I think he just took his official visit to Oregon, probably trying to become an early grad. I just don't think USC is going to be in it for him. I've been getting asked a lot about Cameron Fabakulian. He's a guy that's committed to Washington, sort of cornerback safety-ish a little bit of both. He's tall. He's about 6'1", 6'2", about 180 pounds. Was offered by USC during the May evaluations. I don't know how hard they're recruiting him. And also, I think it's tough to recruit against Washington. Jimmy Lake has been really good against USC. Again, that's a guy who's going to recruit full-time. He's on the kids, and he's always a guy that gets his name dropped. And I think that's hard for USC when they kind of sort of slow play kids and don't get on them real hard. And then, at the end of the year, it's like, okay, we like you a lot. We're going to recruit you. We want you to get there. Kind of like they did with Julius Irvin last year. So that's going to be hard. I think that's a guy that they're on. He did come to the UCLA game. He was involved, a little bit with the pregame stuff, and kind of saw that, okay, he still got contact with USC, still has a relationship with USC, but I could see that being a tough pull for USC at the end of the year. The one guy that's kind of interesting we talked about in the war room last weekend is Elijah Blades. Now, he's committed to Oregon, but he really likes USC, and he's got a good relationship with USC, mainly because of this recruitment out of high school. When he was recruited, he had bad grades. He was out of mirror, and he was really back on his grades. And Nebraska sort of suckered him and said, hey, we can get you in, we can get you in. And USC was upfront with him and told him, look, you're not going to get in. You need to go somewhere. We need to set you up. We need to get you out into a JUCO and get you on a plan to get qualified. And he kind of bought in with Nebraska trying to bring him in and saying he could qualify, and then he didn't. So he ended up at Western Arizona and committed to Oregon at some point last spring, but still very much in contact with USC, and a guy that I would expect to probably pop up on an official visit. Now, again, like I said, USC is recruiting against an Oregon team that is pretty good, that's showing something on the field. They were trash last year, but now they've got their quarterback back, who might be, the best quarterback in the nation, quite frankly. A lot of people think he's going to be a first-round pick. They look like a good team, and if they're able to get to a pack, they're able to win the Pac-12 championship, they're going to steal guys from USC. Just flat out, they're going to take guys from USC. And basically saying they're going to keep a lot of the guys that they have, guys like Mace Funa and Elijah Blade, and they'll probably pluck a couple other guys away that USC's recruiting. If not, USC will still be there, and a guy like Elijah Blades, if USC is able to kind of close the season out strong, I could see him ending up at USC. Very possible. And being a guy that, at 6'3", 195 pounds, really fits more that profile of what USC's been looking at. And with all of the guys that have left and all the transfers and guys get kicked out of school at the cornerback position, in addition to Biggie Marshall being a senior, Isaiah Langley being a senior, that's a big selling point in terms of depth chart and playing time. JUCO guys don't care about wins and losses as much probably as a high school player, because their main thing is, I need to get on the field ASAP, right? I only have so much eligibility left. I need to be on the field ASAP. And I think when it comes to the defensive back position and the depth chart, USC's actually got more to sell than Oregon. So that's another reason why he's going to take a serious look at USC. But that's at the cornerback position. The safety position, You got Noah Pulak. A to USC kind of started up again. They started really kind of pushing on him more as the season progressed. I think the biggest question with him, A, he wants to play cornerback. So you got to recruit him as a cornerback. So he's sort of very similar to Chris Steele, although Chris Steele is open to playing either. He just wants to get on the field, and that's, you know, that's music to USC's ears. Well, with Noah Pulak, he wants to start out as a corner. I don't know if that's his best position. The other big question with him is the durability factor. I mean, you see his cousins obviously had some injuries at USC, but Noah himself has had some injuries just in high school where he's missed some games. So, again, a little bit of a question mark there, but a guy that USC's after. I think a guy that sort of kind of has gotten lost in the mix that USC offered during the 7-on-7 camp is Sione Vaki, kind of a smaller 5'11", 190-pound safety athlete type that doesn't have a lot of big-time offers, not being recruited by a lot of schools, but USC really liked him at that 7-on camp. You could tell the way the coaches were around him. He played really well. Like I said, a little smaller, so we kind of looked at him at the time and said, that's not what USC tends to recruit at safety, but beggars can't be choosers. And certainly, you know, going after, you know, other guys that are bigger safeties that are more national names, maybe like DeMarco, Helmus, and those type of guys that are committed to schools like, Nebraska, or excuse me, schools like Alabama or Penn State. There's a few of those guys that USC still keep in contact with, but you kind of look at, what are the realistic chances here? You know, I know Noah Gates, yeah, kind of realistic. Alabama's, I think, slow playing him right now. And if USC continues to recruit him hard with his cousin there, I think there's a good shot that they could be able to pull him in. Cameron Williams is another guy committed to Washington right now, but he's been to USC a bunch of times. He decommitted from Oregon already. I think there's a possibility that USC ends up with him. So you kind of have to look within the realm of what USC has to be able to recruit. And they're not really big national recruiting. And I think the way they recruit right now, and I said this last year, I don't foresee USC being in it for a lot of guys nationally. Texas, Florida, I just don't see the pull. I don't think with the way they recruit year-round and sort of the aggressiveness and the connections and all those things you sort of need, the planets that need to align for you to be able to go out and get a TJ Bryant, I just don't see that happening with this staff. I just don't think that they're interested really in going to that trouble and trying to pull off those maneuvers recruiting against the likes of Florida State and Florida and Alabama and all those schools down there at Clemson. I mean, it's really hard to do nowadays. And I think it's really extremely hard seeing just the approach that USC has. Those are not the type of guys that you can just, you know, call up in November and be like, hey, you know, you got an offer from us last April. We haven't really talked to you at all the whole year, but you want to take an official visit out to USC? That's tough to do, to land those guys. It's not impossible, but it's really, really tough to do. And I don't think USC is really into spinning the wheels that way. It took a lot of guys to get offers, a lot of guys to come on official visits before you got TJ Bryant. And then, you know, TJ Bryant kind of turned out to be a bust. So that didn't really work out for USC in that way. And there are plenty of guys on the West Coast that if you develop them and you know, you look at Boise State and you look at Washington, you look at a few schools that had some really good defensive backfields in the past, you know, decade. They didn't have to really go to Florida to get guys. They didn't have to go in the South to get guys. But you got to develop them. You got to be able to bring them in. And if it's a three-star guy, you got to be able to develop them into a guy that can be able to contribute and make plays for you. And so that's the other half of, you know, with recruiting. If you're not developing those players, it doesn't matter if they're four-star or five-star guys.
Well, that's a great that's a great dive into USC defensive back recruiting. So I recommend you bookmark that if you want to listen to what's going on with USC DB recruiting. That's great stuff from Gerard there. Maybe we'll do the different position next time. I like that.
It'll be hard. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously pertinent because USC lost a good handful of players that are really good players. I mean, these are guys that were all outside of Godfrey was really the only three-star. I mean, Jack Jones is a five-star. Jamel Cook, Army All-American. Bubba Bolden, a guy that was cusp four-star, five-star. I mean, these are all good players, and you're losing all of them with a very short amount of time. That in itself is a little bit of an indictment, in my opinion. I think that's a bit of an issue. And obviously, you can't look at the coaching staff and put everything on them that's a behavioral issue and say, oh, you know, you gotta be on top of all these kids all the time. And I mean, they're young adults, and they're making huge mistakes. Obviously, Jack Jones screwed up with his grades. You can't be walked to class. Nobody's going to walk you to class and and, you know, wipe your chin and everything. You got to go and be a young man and go do your thing and know that this education is what you get. You get what you want to really put into it. And you can talk about degrees all day long, but if you're not going to class, you're not really learning, and you're not getting anything out of it. So, I mean, I want to put that on the coaching staff, but at the same time, there's things that have gone on where guys are falling through the cracks. And it's just, when it's one or two players, it's one thing, but, you know, you got five guys now that are gone. And Akili Ross is probably one of the biggest, where you're talking about communication being the biggest issue. This wasn't a behavioral issue. This wasn't a kid that was out doing bad things. This is a guy that actually played for you last year, had a couple interceptions, looked like he was ready to step up and be a guy to take over and maybe, you know, even be an improvement athletically over Chris Hawkins. And somewhere along the line, the communication wasn't there, where he felt like he was being benched by a guy that had a potential Title IX issue hanging over his head. I mean, that's a drop in the ball. That's like Kerry Angeline. That's an indictment. That's an issue. That's where coaches are not on top of their stuff, and they're not being able to see kind of sort of how things are shaking out. He should have known that he was the guy. He should have felt confident he was the guy. And hey, you're hurt, but look it, you're our guy. Take your time. You know the defense. We don't need you in here right now. Instead, he felt like he was being slow played with his injury in order to play Bubba Bolden, a guy that, like I said, you know, 3 months prior or something like that, he had this issue that everybody knew about. So that right there was a little bit of a problem, and that's like I said, you could look at that as a little bit of an indictment.
Okay, well, we have a couple questions, and then we'll wrap things up. Bearsecutor wrote in. He said, Gerald, if available, I think he was serious. If available, does USC take all of the following? He said, Sean Ryan, Anuk Viami, I think that's how you say his name. Jason
Vamahi?
Vamahi?
Inoke Vamahi?
Yeah, okay. Inoke, what? How did you say his first name?
Yeah, Inoke.
Yeah. Inoke, okay. So there's no vowel at the end, but that's interesting. Okay. Jason Rodriguez, Jonah T. He says, Williams, a JC guy. He said, I say yes, that we are in desperate need of offensive tackles. We doing seem to be busy recruiting. He said, I think he means they're too busy recruiting offensive guards or centers in this class. And not all these guys are projected to be prototypical offensive tackles in college anyway, right? Bearsecutor.
So the question is USC take all those guys? The one guy is Jay Williams, who's the junior college offensive tackle, came in on an unofficial visit a couple weeks ago, doesn't have a scholarship offer. His scholarship offers are from, like, FCS schools. So either there's a grades thing going on there, or there's just that we're not really sure he's that great thing going on there. So that's sort of kind of a question mark. I think it's probably more grades, because I think USC would look at him and being a little more prototypical size-wise to be an offensive tackle, I think they'd be all over him otherwise, and he would have an offer. In terms of the other guys, yeah, you bring him in, because you need numbers at the offensive line, period. And whether they're going to be, you know, legit franchise left tackles or not, I still think you definitely need all those guys that you can get. So I would say, yeah, 100%. Yes to Sean Ryan. Yes to Inoke Bahenki. Yes, you know, Jason Rodriguez is already committed, obviously. Jonathan Au, he's a guy that USC is recruiting, but again, it's against Oregon, and Oregon's got maybe the best offensive line in the Pac-12 right now. They've got a bunch of guys that are rated really high. USC doesn't have any of that. You know, offensive line has been a big issue for USC. That's a hard sell. You know, if Oregon continues to win, and they continue to show a product on the field which is superior than what USC has,
They're physical
now. Committed to Oregon.
Oregon's physical right now. They're running the ball down your throat. So,
yeah.
That's now, appealing to the offensive line. You got Penny Sewell there. I mean, he's starting left tackle as a true freshman. I mean, that's something to sell.
Freshman All-American. He'll be a freshman All-American for them. And so that's tough to when USC's got so many questions, and there's been really, I mean, when you talk about the offensive woes, that's sort of where it begins for them. You know, I mean, that's sort of the starting point where USC's got to get better. The better the offensive line plays, running the ball and just, you know, not with the penalties and everything else, that's going to be what really, I think, improves the offense quite a bit. I mean, JT Daniels, although maybe he's not getting all the reads in right, maybe he's not making all the calls right and all this and that, he's been pretty good about his ball security. you haven't seen a ton of really bad interceptions. He's been okay. You know, he hasn't killed them a lot in games as much as I think some of these penalties and bad snaps and things that have gone on were just misassignments by the offensive line that's just killed the running game in some of these games. So I think, it's a tough sell when you're going against a team that's showing that they have a better product on the field, and their head coach is an offensive line guy. He's an offensive line coach by trade. So that's something that's going to be very difficult to be able to get a guy like Jonah Ta'anau away from USC. USC's still trying. They're still involved. But again, it's we could sound like a broken record here in terms of how USC recruits at certain positions, the mentality that's there, and then you transfer that over to how they're playing on the field. Look, if you want to have that mentality of I don't really want to recruit all year and I'll just do it, at the end of the year when it matters and it's after the season and we're in between the bowl game and the regular season, then you better have a great team and that's going out there and beating the pants off everybody, and your unit is as solid as anything. Because if you don't, then you're not a good recruiter or a good coach. I mean, that's basically what you're saying. So that's the problem that USC runs into if they're not able to follow through and have a good season like they have the past 2 years.
We got one last question for you. It kind of goes along with the DB position, but Puka Nacua has an older brother that's a safety in the NFL. With the lack of great safety prospects in the class of 2019, can Puka be converted to safety? That's from Epic Rubin.
I've never seen him play safety. I saw him play a little bit of cornerback against Santa Margarita, and he got burned really, really bad on one play where the receiver just like ran by him. I think he just completely zoned out and thought he had maybe a safety over the top or something, but he got burned and tried to run this kid down and couldn't do it. And it ended up being like a 70-yard touchdown reception. So that wasn't the greatest play to evaluate him as a defensive back. And I didn't really play much defensive back after that point. So it's hard to say, does he have the ability to play defensive back? He's a really good athlete, and he's a really good receiver. I mean, he's really polished. He sort of has a little bit of Robert Woods to him in terms of the route running, how hard he runs. He's more physical than you would think for his size. And he's really a much better open field runner than you would think. I mean, he's pretty good, pretty strong in the open field, and is able to break tackles, and his vision is pretty good. And he does get a lot of yards after the catch. So he's a really good receiver. I don't know if you want to play around with him playing another position. Most of these guys at USC recruits out of high school that get that athlete tag, wherever they recruit him and say, hey, we're bringing you in as such and such, that's where they play. It's been a lot less movement there and experimenting than you had with Pete Carroll's staff and even Lane Kiffin's staff. I think this staff is pretty much, Clay Helton's a guy that he feels like, hey, puts his word on, hey, we're bringing you in at this position. You're going to play this position until you tell us you want to play another position. That's pretty much what they go with. So I don't know that you're going to see that. I think it might be a moot point in terms of Puka playing another position when USC's like, hey, we want you as a receiver and you're going to be a receiver. Really, it's about USC at this point trying to get him away from Utah, who's going to keep coming and coming, and we're going to see this weekend if they've got a little more of a platform to be able to recruit him off of.
All right. That's the great Jerome Martinez. A little over an hour, not too bad.
The great.
The great in Iowa, Gerard Martinez.
How about Gerard Martinez? It's just Gerard Martinez giving you his opinions and hopefully a little bit of insight along with it on USC recruiting, the state of USC recruiting right now. Obviously, things are going to change a bit. We're getting close to that time of year where things start to get a little more intense. And like I said, it's going to be interesting to see how USC finishes out the year. It's going to be important. And how do they play these big games? Are they going to have another loss in here that's a little unexplainable? Are they going to be able to beat the teams that they should beat? This Utah game is a really big game where a lot of people doubt that they're going to be able to go into Utah and beat a solid team at home. And so we're going to see how they do.
We will see. All right. So make sure you're tuned in to the Pac-12 Network. And if you don't get it, we'll have lots of coverage. We'll have four people out there cover the game from USCfootball.com. So make sure you check it out and send in your questions. We didn't have a whole lot of recruiting questions the last week or two. So if you have a recruiting question, email us podcast@USCfootball.com. And, we'll try to do another one of these pretty soon and get Gerard on there again. But Gerard, Thanks again, and safe travels back to Los Angeles in the RV across the country.
Yes, definitely. It's safe travels. Mainly it's Nebraska, the one-lane state. That's what I've renamed it. It's Nebraska, the one-lane state, because they seem to like to do a lot of construction on the main highway, and you end up in one. It's like it's two lanes of traffic, but they make it where it's really like it should be like one way. It's two lanes, but they make it in the or two lanes going one way that they make into one lane going both ways. Yeah. So it's, yeah, with the wind that you get through Nebraska, it's kind of funky, you know, and you're driving in a 38-foot motorhome and it starts to get windy and you feel it rocking and you've got semis, you know, barreling at you at 80 miles per hour. The speed limit in Nebraska is 75 miles per hour. And in Utah, it's 80 miles per hour. What are we doing in Southern California? What is that? What is 65 miles per hour? Are you kidding me? What is that? That's ridiculous. What is that? Is that that's stupid. That's so ridiculous. I can't believe that we should be driving. I drive 80. Now, don't get me wrong, but it should be legal. I should be able to drive 100 if how I see it.
Yeah. Gerard's got the Sammy Hagar song blaring in the background. He does have a lead foot, I'll tell you.
Well,
he does like to drive quick.
I do, but I'm safe.
You're safe. Yeah, yeah. No, never feel unsafe when you're driving, but you do like to drive quick. You're just a fast driver. That's fine. Well, I don't know how fast you get that motorhome going, but hopefully you roll it along. Be safe. And thanks again for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
All right. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. And all of our stuff is up, of course, on USCFootball.com. Thanks for tuning in to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. And we will talk to you next time.